The House will come to order. Please stand if you're able, including folks in the gallery. Please stand for our flag salute, which will be led by Representative Springer.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Please remain standing. Our opening ceremonies will be presented by the Reverend Karen Wood, who serves as an associate chaplain at Willamette University, guest of Representative Reed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I invite you to join me in a prayer for Earth Day, for ears and hearts to hear. Let us pray. Holy One, on this day when we celebrate your creation, create in each of us a listening heart. May we listen to one another in openness and mercy. May we listen to plants and animals in wonder and respect. May we listen to the wind and the sea and the river with love and compassion. And may we listen to you with quietness and with awe. And in this listening, may we find the wisdom to cooperate, the inspiration to create, the energy to generate, the foresight to contemplate the kind of work that we might do together if we but listen to the healing spirit that beckons us into peace and community and creativity. We do not ask for a perfect world, but we do ask for a better world. We ask for the gift of listening. Amen.
Thank you very much, Reverend Wood. Courtesies, Representative Reed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I hope you'll help me welcome Karen Wood, associate chaplain at my alma mater across the street at Willamette University. She has had a varied career, a number of institutions, a number of roles, and among her other roles at Willamette is as director of the Lilly Project, which helps students integrate, I think, their academic pursuits with their career goals. She's a valued member of the community across the street, and I appreciate her being here and setting us forth on our work today on Earth Day. Thank you, Karen.
Thank you. Let's turn over to our minute for Oregon sesquicentennial history. Representative David Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, today's history minute is adapted from an entry in the Oregon Encyclopedia written by Jeff LaLand, who is the archaeologist and historian for the Rogue River Siskiyou National Forests. More than any other figure during the Pacific Northwest beaver trade, Peter Skeen Ogden epitomized that endeavor's transcontinental reach, its rapacious competition for wealth, and its relentless challenge to the stamina and skill of the individuals placed in charge of its trapping brigades. Peter Ogden's major importance to Oregon history is his contribution to geographic knowledge gained as chief trader in charge of the six consecutive Snake Country brigades that operated out of Fort Vancouver between 1824 and 1830. In 1844, Ogden traveled to London to advise his superiors and the British government on settling the Oregon question. He returned to Fort Vancouver in 1845, but the number of American settlers on both sides of the Lower Columbia by that time helped tip the balance in 1846 to a final international border drawn at the 49th parallel, much farther north than it had been intended. With Dr. John McLaughlin's retirement as Hudson's Bay Company chief factor that year, it fell to Ogden to hammer out arrangements with the Americans for the company's posts and operations south of the boundary. In late 1847, Chief Factor Ogden's skill at negotiating with native people proved crucial in the release of 47 American women and children captured by Cayuse Indians during the murders at the Whitman Mission. In ill health, Ogden left Fort Vancouver for the last time in the summer of 1854, removing across the Columbia to Oregon City, where he died in September of that year. His grave is in Oregon City's Mountain View Cemetery.
Thank you. Let's move ahead with the rest of courtesies. We have many bills on our agenda today, so I would encourage brevity in our courtesies. Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have the great pleasure of introducing over on the side aisle my daughter-in-law, Alana, and my grandson, Fox, who had a one-year birthday on Monday.
Welcome and happy birthday. Representative Thatcher.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to introduce my nephew sitting beside me today. He's visiting with the Oregon Connections Academy, but he... I just asked his mom if he could tell me something that he wouldn't tell me, but it's come to light that he's an excellent guitarist, and I know him to be a night owl, so I'm thinking he's going to have a band of his own someday soon. So just welcome him, and then I'd like to welcome my sister on the side aisle, Angela Bench. This is Wesley Bench, and they're here for Orca Day.
Great, welcome. Representative Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Today it's my privilege to have three honorary pages. The first honorary page is Brent Holliday, who is in 11th grade at Marist Catholic High School. He's in the National Honor Society, does track and field and plays soccer, and would like to enter wildlife management when he begins his career. Then I have Adam Nazelrode, and I probably mispronounced that, my apologies, who is also in the 11th grade at Marist Catholic High School. He plays football, does wrestling, and track. He plans on attending college for 6 years and becoming a family physician. We certainly need more of those. And then Mitchell Wilson, who is also in the 11th grade at Marist Catholic High School, plays basketball, football, track, and is on a retreat team at Marist. And his career goals are to become a police officer as an interest in crime and punishment. And I welcome them to our Capitol.
Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I also have an honorary page from Marist High School, which is an excellent school located in Eugene, but obviously has students from all around the area. I'd like to introduce Kelsey Schmidt. Kelsey is studying, is in the National Honor Society. She works in the Eco Squad, a volunteer program. She hopes to engage in a career in foreign relations. She also is a junior, as I think are all of the others. Welcome, Kelsey.
Representative Chris Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker and colleagues. Please join me in welcoming an honorary page, also from Marist High School, Emily Tanke. Emily is a 16-year-old junior at Marist. She enjoys volunteering, is on the dance team, participates in drama and singing. Now, Emily's career goals, Mr. Speaker, are undecided, and frankly, as a 16-year-old junior, I think that that's completely appropriate. So thank you for joining us here today, Emily.
Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm not sure if I should say I have a gaggle, a flock, or a herd of honorary pages to introduce to you today. I have six to introduce, and I'll try to speak quickly. Amanda Ewing, please stand. Thank you. Amanda's involved in track, volleyball, Eco Squad, National Honor Society, and the Prom Committee. She would like to go into medical science or pediatrics, perhaps. Lauren Furr, track and field, and has hopes of being a veterinarian, perhaps. Jinhee Beck, dance team, performance and competition, National Honor Society, and Kids Helping Kids. She's also thinking about being a pediatrician. Emily Hacker, soccer, basketball, lacrosse, and music. She would like a degree, perhaps, in medicine. Allie Steibel, track, cross country, National Honor Society, piano, and the volunteering program, would like to go into writing or engineering. And Helen Walters, varsity lacrosse, band, symphony, lifeguard, and leadership team. She's thinking about biology, possibly marine biology. Good luck to you all.
Welcome to all of our pages today. We appreciate your service to the House. Go Spartans. Further courtesies, Representative Weird.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, today is a very special day for those of us at the Capitol and for hundreds of parents, students, and teachers from Oregon Connections Academy. I want to introduce you to these families and have them stand up in the gallery so you know that they are here. These families come from all over the state, colleagues. They're from every corner of the state, Medford, Pendleton, Newport, Gresham, all over. They're here for the fourth year in a row for Oregon Connections Academy Day at the Capitol. It is truly a learning adventure for these students. They will be on a trivia scavenger hunt today and will be meeting their legislators to find out more about the legislative process. For those of you who don't know, ORCA, as we like to call it, is the state's largest public virtual charter school based in the SIO school district. This year, they brought their cyber school to the Capitol and will have regular classes underway in the Galleria and in Hearing Room 50. I think this is a first for the Oregon legislature. We have the ability to observe virtual learning while it's going on in progress. If you can make it to Hearing Room 50 during the noon hour, you're in for a treat. Not only will there be several students doing their schoolwork, but there will also be a live lesson underway. Today is a learning opportunity for those of us in the legislature who have not experienced the magic of online schools. I encourage you all to join me for this unique opportunity at noon today and to take the time to meet your constituents when they stop by your office or greet you in the hallway. Thank you, colleagues.
Welcome to all of you. Welcome to your House of Representatives. Any further courtesies? The clerk will now open the voting system for the purpose of verifying the presence of a quorum. Representative Shields is here. Representative Call. Representative Call. Off the floor. Representative Clem is here. Representative Tomei. Representative Tomei. Representative Tomei is present. Excused. Representative Widener, Representative Witt, all other members are present. Messages from the governor. Messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform you the Senate has passed Senate Bills 5513, 157, 316, 484, 533, and 640. Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform you the Senate has passed House Bill 2201, Senate Bill 5514, 5527, 48, 123, 348, and 579. Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform you that he has signed Senate Bills 5539, 63, 75, and 356.
First reading, memorials and resolutions. Standing committee reports. The committee report file has been distributed. Special committee reports. Special orders of business. Propositions and motions. Representative Roblin.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 2466 and repass the bill.
Representative Roblin moves that the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 2466 and repass the bill. To your motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You may remember this bill. It was a really great bill that we sent to the Senate that takes a responsibility that used to go to one committee and spreads it out to all of our interim committees, and that is the review of the reports that our legislative council makes on the rules that are generated after our bills pass. So they do a review of those, and they see if they comply with what they believe the intent was from our perspective. Those will now be sent to individual committees that are responsible for the different agencies out there in the interim for them to look over. That brilliant thing that the Senate did, and I really hate to say this, but it was brilliant, was how do we get the agencies to comply with what we believe to be the real intent of the law was passed within their rules. And what happens now with this amendment is that the review that comes from the Legislative Council will go to the committee. If the committee concurs with the legislative review and it disagrees with the way the rule was written, we can't compel them to do it, but we will put up on the internet the disagreement so that everybody can understand that we in the legislature don't agree with the rule that was written in relation to our law, until they choose to comply with what we believed, or until we take action as a legislative branch the next session to correct that with a legislative fix. So it gives us some impetus to help in directing how rules are written from our branch to the executive branch by use of transparency, putting it out there for people to see that we don't necessarily agree with the way the rule was written. I urge your aye support.
Is there further discussion on this motion? Representative Hannah, am I safe in assuming you're in the queue for a separate motion? Additional discussion on this motion? Seeing none, Representative Roblin, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are the opinion that the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 2466 and repass the bill will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system.
Voting aye is Dembro.
Representative Clem, how do you vote? Clem votes aye. Representative Jefferson Smith votes aye. Representative Beyer, how do you vote? Beyer votes aye. Representative Nolan votes aye. House Bill 2466, having received that constitutional majority, is declared repassed. Additional propositions and motions. Representative Hannah.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Because I believe job creation to be our number one priority, I move that House Bill 3469 be withdrawn from the Committee on Revenue.
Representative Hannah moves that House Bill 3469 be withdrawn from the Committee on Revenue. It's probably worth reminding us, since it's the first of these motions we've had this session, that under our rules, House Rule 9.30 provides that, quote, immediately following the motion to withdraw a measure from committee, the clerk shall read the measure's number, title, and summary. So the clerk will read the bill's number, title, and summary.
House Bill 3469, related to personal income taxation, creating new provisions, establishes personal income tax credit of $500 per dependent child, reduces personal income tax rates for certain taxpayers by modifying income tax brackets. Applies to tax years beginning on or after January 1, 2010.
Under House Rule 5.15, the motion to withdraw a measure from committee is not debatable. So those are the opinion that House Bill 3469 should be withdrawn from the Committee on Revenue. We'll vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Schaffler, how do you vote? Schaffler votes no. Representative Dembro, how do you vote? Votes no, thank you. Representative Berger, how do you vote? Berger votes aye. Representative Van Orman, are you in the queue for this bill?
I wish to change my vote to yea.
Representative Van Orman changes her votes from nay to aye.
Yes,
correct.
Thank you.
Thank you. The motion to withdraw House Bill 3469 from the Committee on Revenue, having not received the required majority, is declared failed. Further propositions and motions? First reading of House Bills.
House Bill 3481 relating to criminal sentencing, House Bill 3482 relating to election day, House Bill 3483 relating to unemployment insurance and declaring an emergency.
Bills read for the first time or passed the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of House Bills.
House Bill 2401 relating to assault, House Bill 2584 relating to antitrust regulation, House Bill 2664 relating to criminal justice commission, House Bill 2687 relating to receipt of monies on behalf of a minor, House Bill 2883 relating to protective proceedings task force and declaring an emergency, House Bill 3041 relating to health literacy and declaring an emergency, House Bill 3111 relating to unlawful trade practice cases, House Bill 3263 relating to statutes of limitations.
Bills read for the second time were passed a third reading. Consent calendar. The clerk will read the bill in a short summary.
House Bill 2349 relating to value given for release of lien directs county treasurer to pay investment income to person who deposits money with county to release perfected lien against improvement or land when treasurer distributes money to owner and lien claimants.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2349A. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Jensen votes aye. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote? Gilliam votes aye. House Bill 2349A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Third reading of House Bills. The clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 5046, relating to financial administration of the real estate agency and declaring an emergency.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 5046A. Representative David Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 5046 is the Oregon Real Estate Agency Fee Bill. Joint Committee on Ways and Means recommends that the bill be amended to increase the criminal background check fee from $40 to $47. The agency requires a criminal background check be conducted in all new licensed applicants. The intent of the fee increase is for applicants to pay fully the cost of this service, which is provided through Oregon State Police. At the lower rate of $40, existing licensees were subsidizing the cost of the service. The actual cost of the service is $47.25. The new fee is effective July 1, 2009. The fee increase is expected to generate $21,000 in other fund revenues. Your Joint Committee on Ways and Means recommends approval of House Bill 5046A.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Edwards, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Kotek, how do you vote? Kotek votes aye. Representative Cameron votes aye. Representative Jensen votes aye. Representative Springer, how do you vote? Springer votes no. House Bill 5046A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2097, relating to care of last resort obligations and declaring an emergency.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2097A. Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. 2097A, good bill, should pass. I should give you a little bit of an explanation, however. Carrier of last resort is a very important issue to those of us in rural areas. What it basically says is that there is, for everybody living out there, a phone system, a carrier of last resort that we can attach to in these rural areas. With the proliferation of different kinds of communication devices, including cell towers and cell companies, there has become a new entry into the rural areas. And so in certain places, a new subdivision may get built, and the person who's building the subdivision may make a subcontract with a provider, and they decide they're going to put a cell tower in, and they're going to put all the phone systems in, and that becomes the phone system for that particular development. But there's still, just outside the gate, just down the road, the provider of last resort. who still has an obligation if that other company were to go bankrupt or to decide that the group inside decides they don't want to deal with them any longer, that provider would still have to come and put in lines and make sure that the people were whole and had a provider. They can charge for that and other stuff. What the bill originally was going to do was say, if you make that special contract with this other group, there would no longer be a provider of last resort. You just made your bed and you're going to have to lie in it. We had a lot of discussions and amendments, and what we finally developed was that using the PUC as the arbitrator, that there still will be this last resort provider, some little local phone company, and there are a lot of them. And everybody will know at the very beginning, it probably would be of interest to the people buying those lots that you put in the services, even if you're going to use others. But if you didn't do that, there is a procedure now whereby a person in that development can go to the PUC and say, I really need my provider of last resort to come in and provide the services. And now there is a procedure where they really actually sit down and negotiate how they come back and what the expenses are going to be and how we're going to do that, make that happen. I think it was a great agreement amongst a lot of people. When we finally got it all worked out, there were no one that came and testified against this bill. I think working within the system, making things work better so everybody knows their relationships at the beginning of a situation instead of at the end is the way to go. This sets up those procedures. I encourage an aye vote.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Roblin, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Clem, how do you vote? Clem votes no. Representative Jefferson Smith, how do you vote? Smith votes aye. Representative Galizio, how do you vote? Galizio votes aye. House Bill 2097A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2144, related to systems of care for youth.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2144A. Representative Van Orman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 2144 comes to the floor from the Committee on Human Services with a due pass recommendation. This bill instructs the Department of Education, the Oregon Youth Authority, Department of Human Services, and the State Commission on Children and Families to take part in developing an integrated system of care to facilitate a planning process for youth at risk of developing emotional, behavioral, or substance abuse-related needs. Oregon ought to develop a better way to deliver services that can more effectively help children and families who have complex needs. This system will utilize their families, community, and natural supports to provide a flexible group of services in a customized plan that reflects the youth and family needs, values, and preferences. HB 2144 will also result in the use of blended funding sources to help eliminate the fragmented treatment that clients can feel. This legislation is a result of the Wraparound Initiative Steering Committee vision for a statewide wraparound initiative. This program was begun through an executive order from the governor 2 years ago, and it was charged with creating a plan to help agencies build a framework for a coordinated, connected system of care. This bill is needed because it will give agencies a clear direction from the legislature. It will give authority to go ahead and combine funds and will make sure that the wraparound can continue regardless of a change in a department.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Van Orman, do you wish to close? She does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Huffman, how do you vote? Huffman votes aye. Representative Roblin, how do you vote? Representative Roblin, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Barton, how do you vote? Barton votes aye. Representative Nolan votes aye. Representative Stigler votes aye. Representative Reed, how do you vote? Representative Reed? Representative Reed's off the floor. House Bill 2144A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2164, relating to tax subtraction for compensation received by a member of Armed Forces of the United States.
The question now rises upon third reading, final passage of House Bill 2164. Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This is a common sense bill. Right now, the regular forces of our armed forces and the reserves get a relief from their taxes when they're performing their duties, whether it be active service or training. On the other hand, our National Guard actually only gets that relief when they are on active duty and not while they're training. This bill would clarify that the National Guard also gets its this tax exemption up to $6,000 of income while they're on active service, and that active service now includes weekend drills, annual training, summer camp, and special school attendance and battle assemblies. This is a good bill. It should pass. Thank you.
Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Riley, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jefferson Smith, how do you vote? Smith votes aye. Representative Call, how do you vote? Call votes aye. Representative Cameron votes aye. Representative Krieger, how do you vote? Representative Krieger? How do you vote, Representative Krieger? Krieger votes aye. Representative Springer votes aye. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Representative Jensen votes aye. House Bill 2164, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2165, relating to Oregon National Guard.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2165A. Representative Maurer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 2165 permits the governor to authorize qualified members of the Oregon National Guard to provide health care services in Oregon during declared states of emergency or public health emergencies. House Bill 2165 states that National Guard members would not be subject to Oregon licensing requirements for health care providers, that provided that each member is qualified by virtue of his or her military position, training, and qualifications to perform the same functions as an Oregon licensed health care provider for the armed forces. Good bill, should pass.
Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Maurer, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Buckley, how do you vote? Buckley votes aye. Representative Stigler, how do you vote? Stigler votes aye. Representative Maurer votes aye. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Jensen votes aye. House Bill 2165A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2218, related to wildlife and prescribing an effective date.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2218A. Representative Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I bring you House Bill 2218A from the Committee on Agriculture and Natural Resources and Rural Communities. This is an increase on the surcharge for a resident and non-resident license from $2 to $4. And it also will extend the sunset on all surcharges for 10 years to December 31st, 2019. Colleagues, I want to be clear, this is not the department's big fee bill. This is just a surcharge to fund a very successful and well-loved program in the department. The Access and Habitat Program funds habitat improvement projects, increases public hunting access on private lands, and creates working partnerships between landowners, hunters, and the Department of Fish and Wildlife. There's a board, Access and Habitat Board, made up of landowner and hunter representatives, along with one at-large members that will review projects and makes recommendations for funding to the Oregon Fish and Wildlife Commission. Colleagues, this is a very successful and well-loved program. We had no testimony against the bill, and I would urge your support.
Further discussion, Representative Krieger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
To the bill.
To the bill. This is going to be one of the fee increases that I am going to support. I'm going to very selectively look at those. It provides, as you saw, the fee increase overwhelmingly was supported by the constituent bases. And as you heard, there's a 10-year extension, and it does fund the Access and Habitat Program, and it was designed to improve public hunting access and wildlife habitat on private lands, and I think that's the key. Types of projects include wildlife forage seeding, water development, riparian fertilization, wetland restoration, law enforcement, and public hunting. And as you heard from the carrier, the landowners and the hunters and anglers are directly members of the boards and the councils of over 40 people statewide pick those projects out. Other funds for the program come from the surcharge allocation in addition to the Green Forage and Deer Enhancement Program and the annual auction raffle of 10 deer tags and 10 elk tags. And this is one of those things where there's a direct connection to the fee to the landowners, to the hunters, and to the anglers, and it's one of the ones we should all be supporting. We can't look at it as just a fee increase. It does something for our natural resources. And remember, Oregon's natural resources and the budgets we've got, we're at 1.7% of the general fund. With the sweeps and where we are now, they're down to about 1%. This helps restore, make sure we can have those programs. Thank you.
Any further discussion? Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Colleague, to the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, this is just another fee increase because your ODF&W will be in front of you again with a bill to increase licenses. They've been very outspoken about it, so this is just another piling on to allow people that are lower income, because, so it'll become very difficult for them to hunt and fish. That's what this amounts to. It's going to get to the point of where it's going to be unaffordable for some of our people in the state of Oregon in order to be able to hunt and fish in this state. And I understand the concept of it. I understand what we have done according to the ODF&W. But, colleagues, when we have 250,000 people out of work right now in an economy that's in the tank, should we be raising fees? That's the question. I will be a no vote.
Seeing no further discussion, Representative Beyer, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Only to say that this surcharge is very much supported by the user groups out there, and I would urge your aye vote.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Kenemer, how do you vote? Kenemer votes aye. Kenemer, I'm sorry, was off the floor. Representative Clem, how do you vote? Clem votes aye. Representative Barton votes no. House Bill 2218A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2244, relating to certificates of death and declaring an emergency.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2244A. Representative Greg Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2244A increases the death filing fee from $7 to $20 and generates approximately $810,000. The last time this fee was increased was back when I was in college in 1993. Now my son's heading off to college. Perhaps it's time to address this issue. The proceeds from House Bill 2244A will be dispersed in two manners. First, $250,000 will be set aside to provide for indigent burials, helping to relieve the burden off of Oregon's small business owners who are currently subsidizing the state in indigent burials. Another $560,000 will be set aside for the Mortuary and Cemetery Board, which has the fiduciary burden of providing oversight of burial trust accounts. Colleagues, House Bill 2244A is needed at this time, and I encourage your aye vote.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Smith, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Clem, how do you vote? Clem votes aye. Representative Call, how do you vote? Call votes aye. Representative Matthews, how do you vote? Matthews votes no. House Bill 2244A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2339, related to exemptions from disclosure of information.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2339A. Representative Barker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, to the bill. Colleagues, House Bill 2339 comes to you from your Committee on Judiciary, where it passed unanimously. It expands the information that is exempt from public disclosure to include certain personal information of public safety officers, district attorneys, deputy district attorneys, the attorney general, and assistant attorney general. As we know, sometimes those who enforce the law and their families are subjected to threats and need to be protected. This bill does allow for the disclosure of records to financial institutions and title companies for business purposes. House Bill 2339 has no fiscal or revenue impact and deserves your aye vote. Thank you.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Barker, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Wingard, how do you vote? Wingard votes aye. Representative Springer votes aye. Representative Galizio votes aye. Representative Kotek votes aye. Representative Beyer. Representative Beyer is off the floor. Representative Shields is off the floor. House Bill 2339A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Colleagues, the chair requests unanimous consent that House Bill 2408 be carried over to the third reading of House Bills calendar on Thursday, April 23rd, 2009. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2435, relating to licensing of physicians and prescribing an effective date.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2435A. Representative Roblin, followed by Representative Bentz.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I want to thank my other representative for his support in this bill. Last interim, I was the committee chair for a group called the Rural Policy Committee. And one of the things that we did in that committee is we took a tour of southwestern Oregon and talked to healthcare professionals, because one of the things that had come up all during the session was how difficult it was in rural areas to maintain the professionals that we needed in the area to do our primary care. There were other issues that kept coming up, and almost all of them pointed to healthcare issues. So we took this Southern Oregon tour, went to hospitals and clinics, to EMT units throughout the area, and one of the issues that continuously came up was that the difficulty in getting doctors licensed. They go through the recruiting, they get this doctor they want from another state, they're all excited about moving them to the area and getting here, and all of a sudden it takes 6, 8, 9 months to get a certificate and to start practicing. And as I looked into the situation, the part that was so frustrating was that neither the doctor nor the board who was doing the certification had any control over how long it took, because of some of the requirements requiring past records from other places where the doctor worked, over which neither group had any control. And if they didn't send in the material, the record continued to be incomplete, so they didn't even start the process. And it was clear to many of us that that was an untenable situation. And so we looked at the history with regard to safety and all those things. We found out that there really didn't seem to be a direct connection. We have a very rigorous system. We think that's a very good thing. It makes our physicians up to a very high standard. The issue is, most of them eventually get resolved and go on to be doctors in the state. It's just this long lag time. And so what we've said is, in rural situations, we expect them to get a preliminary work done in 14 days, to issue a temporary license, good for 90 days, while they continue the process to get all the materials in, continue to work with it. That can be renewed if they haven't done it. We heard from the board that they are working in lots of different ways and that there really wasn't a problem and they can do it, but we consistently kept hearing from our constituents, there is a problem, we aren't getting these people registered in a timely manner, and therefore they go off to other places and we don't secure their employment. The bill, I believe, is a really good answer to that. It continues to preserve the safety of patients. It helps rural areas in their process of getting doctors to replace. In one of my districts, Reedsport, almost half of their physicians were gone, and they were recruiting all through the hospital. It took them a long time. They finally have it back in place now, and they're hopeful that those doctors will stay for a long time. But rural community after rural community is running into this problem. This is a great bill. I urge your eye support.
Is there any further discussion? I'm sorry. Co-carrier, Representative Bentz. My mistake.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And thank you, Representative Roblin and Representative Greenlake, for bringing this bill. I just want to add that for 15 of my 31 years of law practice, I represented Holy Rosary Medical Center in Ontario, Oregon. We had great difficulty in recruiting doctors, and when we found one or two willing to practice in these small communities, we wanted to do everything possible to prevent the loss of those positions. So this bill will assist in that regard. I do want to point one other thing out, and that is that the doctors that come to these rural communities are excellent practitioners. This is not in any way an indication of a lower class of physician. In fact, those willing to serve out in our rural areas are many times of the best. And so I would appreciate your support. This will help our small communities retain our doctors and, I hope, gather new ones. Thank you.
Now, is there any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Roblin, Representative Roblin, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Berger, how do you vote? Berger votes aye. Representative Clem, how do you vote? Clem votes aye. Representative Cannon, how do you vote? Cannon votes aye. Representative Barton votes aye. Representative Gilliam. Representative Gilliam votes aye. Representative Springer votes aye. House Bill 2435A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2578, relating to towers.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2578A. Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Actually, this bill doesn't relate to towers. It relates to towers. But I can see how you can make that mistake. This is the bill you've all been waiting to vote yes on. Your constituents have, I'm sure, sent you tons and tons of emails and said you got to vote yes on this. Let me tell you a little bit about it. This bill changes the way in which those people who tow vehicles for a living must act. And the bill is pretty simple. There are a few things it does. First of all, in all cases where a tower is going to tow a vehicle, he or she must take a photograph, and they must keep that photograph for 2 years, proving that the vehicle was illegally parked. With these very few exceptions, the tower may not tow a vehicle without contact at the time of the tow, and contact is to be made with the owner or the owner's agent. Or in the case where the space is assigned to a tenant, the person who is assigned to the spot. The owner's agent may not be an employee of a tow company. The exceptions to the contact provision are blocks or prevents access by emergency vehicles, blocks or prevents entry to the premises, or blocks a parked motor vehicle. Or otherwise is parked in a place not designed for parking, like sidewalks or lawns. It goes further. It says if the tower is not completed a hookup and the owner of the vehicle is present, the tower must release the vehicle at no cost. If the hookup is completed, however, the tower may charge a charge to unhook the vehicle, but that charge has to be no greater than the charge which is specified in the disclosure, which is already in the current bill and in the current law. The other exception is where there are more living units in the apartment complex than there are parking spaces, so that there are no spaces are assigned. And in this case, a landlord must provide parking passes, and the tower is allowed to tow vehicles which do not display passes. It still must take a photograph to prove that the pass was not displayed. And this is a consensus bill. It's supported by the Towing Association, Landlords Association, large commercial buildings, owners of large commercial buildings, and citizen representatives who were represented in the work group. This is a good bill, and I urge your vote. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Mr. Speaker, I just want to add my support of this bill and compliment the representative from the heart of Washington County. I was a very small part of a work group. I don't know of anything more contentious than parking issues. And we will probably be back here because there are as many parking issues and variations as there are cars. But this was a very good attempt to put together an up-to-date solution to the difficulty regarding lots of issues, including predatory towing. And I believe it is, in fact, a great example of a consensus bill. I urge your aye vote. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion. Representative Dembro.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I too, urge support of this bill. It deals with the most egregious problems that we have with predatory towing. I've heard from a number of constituents just some real horror stories, and it was great to see the parties come together with a reasonable bill that passed unanimously from the committee. No one should have to return to their vehicle after rushing in to deal with an emergency and suddenly find their vehicle gone. And so I urge support of this bill and thank the carrier for his work on it.
Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Riley, do you wish to close?
In honor of a representative who's no longer here, Mr. Speaker, not at this time.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Representative Jensen? Representative Jensen's off the floor. House Bill 2578A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2672, relating to distribution of tobacco products, appropriating money, prescribing an effective date, and providing for revenue raising that requires approval by a 3/5 majority.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2672B. Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2672B fixes a broken tax policy, raises a little bit of revenue, but most importantly, it is a critical public health measure designed to get harmful tobacco products out of the hands of youth. Request to use a visual aid, please.
Representative Gelser requests unanimous consent to suspend the rules for purpose of using a visual aid. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Under our current tax system, we tax gasoline on a per gallon basis. We tax beer on a per barrel basis. And we tax cigarettes on a per pack basis. This means that even though I purchased this pack of Camels last night at a Corvallis Chevron for $5.05, and this package of Pall Malls for $3.65, the same tax was paid on each product, $2.19. This isn't how it works for moist snuff or chewing tobacco. Last night at the same Chevron store, I paid $1.19 for this Longhorn product and $4.75 for this Copenhagen product. If you open up the packages, you'll see that the same product is inside. The size of the package is the same. 1.2 ounces. Each of these products will kill you and cause your teeth to rot. However, the tax on the Longhorn was 64 cents compared to the $1.55 on the Copenhagen. Maybe, like me, you don't lose a lot of sleep at night over whether or not tobacco companies are profitable. However, this system has a profoundly negative effect on our children. The state of Oregon is giving a tax advantage to the low-cost tobacco products that are most accessible, affordable, and attractive to children. And this has been demonstrated by the explosive transformation in the tobacco product. This year, the low-cost cut-rate products are nearly surpassing the market share of the premium-rate brands. This means that at a time when smokeless tobacco products are increasing in popularity, the growth of the market is actually aided by these cheap tobacco products, which are most attractive and affordable to our kids. House Bill 2672B evens the playing field and ends our practice of giving tax breaks to companies that market low-cost products to our young people. Under this bill, the tax on smokeless tobacco products would be on a weight-based or per-package basis rather than a percentage of price. The tax paid on moist snuff products packaged in the average 1.2-ounce container would be $2.14 per container. This means every product will see a rise in retail price, moving this product out of reach of young people. For example, the tax on today's $1.19 can of Longhorn will now be $2.14. That same rate would apply to the new super low-weight, new generation smokeless tobacco products that I will talk with you about in just a minute. House Bill 2672 will have a profound impact on youth use of smokeless tobacco, not just because of the increased retail prices, but more importantly, because it will correct another significant problem in our market. Currently, only one smokeless tobacco company is party to the Smokeless Master Settlement Agreement. Why? Because when the agreement was signed in 1998, the market was very small, and the company, U.S. Tobacco, pretty much controlled the market. Since that time, a barrage of new products has hit the market, and companies such as R.J. Reynolds and Swedish Match have become aggressive players in the smokeless market. The sales of their cheap products has grown dramatically. While there were barely any cans of cheap tobacco sold in Oregon in 2001, in 2007, they sold more than 6.5 million cans just in Oregon. These cheap products are what is driving the growth in this market. And because most of the manufacturers are not party to the Smokeless Master Settlement Agreement, they are not subject to the youth marketing restrictions. This means that R.J. Reynolds and Swedish Match are free to market to our children, advertise in mass transit systems and billboards, sponsor events, and pass out free samples. It's worth noting that when making my tobacco purchases last night, the helpful cashier let me know that if I bought a package of snus, I could have some orbs for free. House Bill 2672 corrects this problem first by banning free samples outright. Secondly, it creates an incentive for the non-participating manufacturers to comply just with the youth marketing restrictions in the Master Settlement Agreement. If they do not, they will pay 40 cents per can into an escrow account. However, if they simply agree not to peddle these deadly products to children, there will be no fee required. What are we asking them to do? We're asking them not to use cartoons, not to have paid product placement, not to do billboard advertising and outdoor advertising. This ban on youth marketing is critical, and it's critical that we do it right now. Portland is unique in the country because it is a prime market for smokeless tobacco companies seeking to build their market among sleek, hip young people, which are in great supply in Portland, I'm told. Portland is one of three test market cities for these new generation products, including products such as orbs, sticks, and melt-away strips. Their products are flavored and shaped in discrete packets that can be disguised in cell phones. High school students can quickly put them in their back pockets. They can slip out a mint during their high school history exam, and no one will know that they're getting their nicotine high. Because the new generation of tobacco products doesn't require smoking or spitting, they are being actively marketed to girls and young women. Permission to use another visual aid, please?
Representative Gelser requesting unanimous consent to use a visual aid. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Please proceed.
These next generation smokeless tobacco products are particularly appealing to our young boys and girls. Today, one in three high school boys illegally uses smokeless tobacco products. And with the increase of these cleverly designed tobacco products, the youth among girls is on the rise. The product packaging, and I've got a couple of these here, is particularly appealing to children, and it isn't easily distinguished from candy. In fact, when I got home last night and dumped my tobacco purchases out on the kitchen table, my own kids thought that I'd brought home some gum and breath mints to share with them. It is not a coincidence that in some markets, these products are placed next to the gum and the Tic Tacs in easy reach of kids. And this one, if you pull it out, it's just the size of a Tic Tac. It dissolves in your mouth and has about three times the amount of nicotine as a cigarette. They may look like gum. They may look like breath mints. They may taste like candy. But make no mistake, these products will kill our children. This is tobacco with training wheels. House Bill 2672 increases prices, targets, and eliminates marketing to youth, and it also creates a fair system that aligns with more than a dozen other states in the federal government. In these tough economic times, this bill has the happy added benefit of raising new revenue. Legislative Revenue Office estimates $5.5 million in new revenue, which, if matched by putting it into health and human service programs, means we could leverage a total of nearly $15 million with the passage of this important bill. This is a win-win-win. Because it's a win-win-win, it has gotten bipartisan support in each committee that it has passed through. It brings more revenue, a smarter tax system, higher prices on deadly tobacco products that are attractive to kids, and the long-ranging public health benefit of sending the message that youth marketing of these dangerous products will no longer be accepted or legal in the state of Oregon. Please join me in voting in favor of House Bill 2672B.
Further discussion, Representative Wisnant.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Questions of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes, she does.
She does.
The good representative from Corvallis, I apologize. Colleagues, I didn't really plan to oppose this bill or speak on the floor today, but after reading the bill and learning more, I rise to ask some questions of the carrier. I apologize for not getting them to you earlier, and I'll speak in opposition to the bill. Good representative, could you please tell the body why Washington State killed this similar bill last year related to the weight tax?
Thank you. I don't serve in the Washington legislature, so I do not know for sure, but I'm glad that you asked this question because Oregon has done something very different than other states that have considered this. Other states, when they have moved to a weight-based tax, have taken a very low rate, which actually lowered the cost of some of these products, which led to opposition from anti-cancer and anti-tobacco programs. In this case, we set a rate that is roughly equivalent to the highest priced smokeless tobacco product, $2.14, which means that no product will see a decrease in price, and that's why we have picked up the support of the Tobacco Free Coalition and other anti-tobacco organizations. And that's why this bill is actually a landmark bill on weight-based tax and a leader in the nation in youth prevention policy.
Representative Wisnant.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Another question, the carrier, please.
Further questions? The carrier yield?
Yes, I do.
She does.
Good representative, you said there was going to be a revenue increase, but I think from the corrected copy we have in our bill folders today, it talks about a revenue neutral. Can you comment on that?
Thank you. I have in front of me House Bill 2672B, date 4/17/2009. If you look at the revenue impact in the box.
There's 22. There's a 22.
I think that, Mazin, do you have a copy of today's, of the new one? Is it on the desk? Thank you very much. Sorry about that. If you look on the box, the idea about neutral is we're not lowering the cost of any of the products, but if you look at the revenue impact box, you'll see at the top current law revenue, proposed law revenue, and you will look at the difference for 2009-2011 is $5.51 million in additional revenue.
Representative Wisdom.
To the bill, Mr. Speaker.
To the bill.
I want to start off, colleagues, by stating that I will support any measures to keep tobacco out of the hands of kids. And the good representative from Corvallis, I would support many of the things she talked about in her presentation carrying the bill today to keep this product away from kids. However, House Bill 2672 is not about helping kids. First and foremost, and I'm not going to talk about this or argue, try to convince you to kill the bill about this, but it is a $5 million tax increase on Oregonians and probably low-income Oregonians. But I'm rising in opposition because we're using this legislative body to side with one tobacco company against other tobacco companies. Colleagues, until I learned the truth about the bill, as I said, I had no intention of even opposing the bill, much less speaking against it. However, if you study this bill, you will see that this bill, which we should not be addressing, and has moved through the process at lightning speed, comes to us at the support of the world's largest tobacco company. Therefore, I'm a little suspicious of the sole motivation behind House Bill 2672, if it is to help children. I have actually become convinced that the bill is a tool to help the world's largest tobacco company take out its competition. Here's a case we have before us in this bill of one company using our legislative process to give a leg up in the marketplace and increase its profits. Today, this bill places us in the middle of a fight between tobacco companies. We should be working to create jobs. We should not be in the middle of a fight between tobacco companies. And as in 2007, the largest tobacco company hired 7 lobbyists in the state of Washington to attempt to pass weight-based taxes, but that effort failed. There's a report from a market analyst that states that this company needs states to adopt weight-based taxes to help reduce the price difference between its higher-priced brands and its competition. Let me address some specifics. The first is the revenue impact of changing the way smokeless tobacco is taxed. Today, smokeless tobacco is taxed at 65% of its wholesale price, as like the majority of other states in the country. Seems pretty fair to me, because the tax revenue increases as the market price goes up. It makes sense that if we tax cars in Oregon, a Ferrari would cost more than the tax on a Chevrolet. This bill is taxing smokeless tobacco by its weight. Thus, revenue, think about this, revenue only grows if people smoke more. What an odd concept. House Bill 2672 would set a tax floor of $2.14 per can, $1.78 per every ounce after that. Under our current tax structure, we get automatic tax revenue increases almost every year. And I'm reading from the Legislative Revenue Office memo down in the impact. It says the new rate is revenue neutral, where it generates more revenue over a period of the 3 coming biennium, and then it reduces revenue collected after that prior to indexing starting in 2019. I'm not sure why we're waiting to 2019 to also put in automatic indexing. Colleagues, please consider the fact that smokeless tobacco manufacturers that were not sued as part of the smokeless master settlement agreement are being asked to pay in this bill 40 cents per can fee into an account that is not being used for any purpose. Now, let's get this straight. We're asking for a per can fee to sit in a bank account that's not being spent anywhere, unless someone sues them. The largest tobacco company says it's only fair that its competition pay. But what they didn't tell you is they only pay an average of 1.6 cents per can in their master settlement agreement. And now they want to obligate by our legislation that the competition will pay 40 cents per can. Colleagues, this bill is designed to increase the competitor's price.
Representative Wingard yields.
Thank you, Representative. Colleagues, this is the most ironic bill we'll consider this session. I agree with the good Representative Corvallis. Don't take this product away. But we have in this bill, we're implementing a tax system that is designed to increase the sale of one tobacco company. We are creating a fund that we're not spending anything, we're not spending from, because one company was sued and the other companies were not. I hope many of you will think twice, like our colleagues in Washington State did, and vote no on this bill. To me, this is the worst case of a special interest politics to come before the body in a long time. We're considering expanding the market share of the biggest tobacco company in the world through our legislative process. Let me end by repeating my beginning comments. I support, and the ideas that the part of the bill that the good representative discussed, I support those measures to keep tobacco out of the hands of our kids. However, I hope I've informed you about the real purpose of this bill, and you'll join me with a no vote.
Further discussion, Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I just wanted to share briefly with you an experience that I had on the Revenue Committee in hearing the testimony on this bill. One of the very surprising things to me was seeing the evidence that an increase in the price of tobacco led to a fairly dramatic decrease in the incidence of youth consumption of that tobacco product. We often hear of tobacco use as being very inelastic in its demand, that when it doesn't change much with the price. And apparently, according to the data that we saw in front of the Revenue Committee, that it actually does change for youth quite a bit with the price here. So I do think this is a good bill that will reduce youth access to smoking, or excuse me, to tobacco products, and will achieve the intended goals. Thank you.
Representative Girard.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
The Smokers Caucus, by the way, is neutral on this bill. However, there was a last-minute amendment to this bill before we heard the bill in Ways and Means that takes all the previous tax money that was being collected away from some very valuable programs, such as the Shaking Baby Syndrome Fund and numerous other monies that were being used to protect babies. It directs that all of the tax money now from this bill goes to the general fund. I think that my colleagues should understand that as they vote yes, if they do, on this bill. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Maurer.
Thanks, Mr. Speaker. Question of the carrier?
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Happily.
She does.
Thank you, and I apologize. I thought about this question just sitting here, and it has to do with whether or not the prohibition of sampling prohibits the distribution of coupons as part of the sampling package.
Let me double check. May I have a moment? The language reads, distribute in this state free samples of smokeless tobacco products to persons under 21 years of age or in any area unless access by persons under 21 years of age to that area is prohibited.
Representative Maurer.
Okay. To the bill.
To the bill.
I have 2 points. Point number one is, according to the revenue impact, it will increase revenue by $5.51 million this biennium, but that number drops off substantially. In 4 years, it's only going to be $970,000. That, in fact, we are not going to leverage federal dollars
to the extent that I think was explained. In fact, we will, or only 41.54% of the total revenue will be leveraged by federal dollars, and so I don't believe we are going to get $15 million, but more in the neighborhood of $6 million. The other point is that this morning in Human Services Committee, we passed a bill, House Bill 2358, that would prohibit free sampling to, or actually prohibit free sampling at all in the state of Oregon. And in fact, House Bill 2358, we have been assured, would prohibit even the distribution of coupons for free samples. And I would urge your consideration of those 2 points and urge your no vote on this bill.
Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, to the bill.
To the bill.
I remember growing up and a lot of my buddies chewed tobacco, and later on the lip grafts started happening where they would get the grafting of skin to deal with the problems they caused from it. So that was all I had really been thinking about on this bill. I wasn't going to speak until my friend from rural Deschutes County mentioned Washington, and I remembered that I spent 3 months helping to care for my grandfather. He'd had his, part of his lung removed from from lung cancer. He smoked for 50 years, and I spent 3 months caring for him. I remember him, not happy that the state of Oregon had a death with dignity law and the state of Washington didn't, asking me to go get a gun so he could end his life because it was now in his brain. In 2004, we lost my wife's dad to lung cancer, and he spent 8 months relatively peaceful, died in the orchard with his daughters right there in the house. So I have no sympathy for any tobacco company, and I think I can agree with my friend that we should be going after all tobacco companies until they stop the death and destruction on our families. And we should not allow the subsidizing by people, whether low income or not. We should not subsidize a behavior that is destructive and deadly to themselves. And I will keep voting and keep voting on any tobacco company until it stops. I understand that this bill got changed late. There are general fund programs that would help with shaken baby syndrome. No amount of general fund or public program can buy my one-year-old daughter the chance to meet the grandfather she never met. Nothing. Please support House Bill 2672.
Representative Richardson.
To the bill.
To the bill.
Mr. Speaker, colleagues, this is House Bill 2672, which is a policy bill, and yet it's being viewed and discussed and dealt with in Ways and Means as a revenue-raising bill. And it's dangerous for us to mix policy with revenue because the policy arguments are compelling. But this bill, as a revenue bill, is a disaster. I mean, it's just the first of a tax, okay? I mean, we're going to see a series of tax increases, and this is one of them. But what we're doing is we're taking a system where presently it's 65% of the value of the product, the wholesale value. When I was a boy, Motel 6 began. Do you know where it got its name? Because it was $6 a night. You go to Motel 6 now, it's not $6 a night anymore, right? Because of inflation over time. And I'll tell you, whether it's moist snuff or anything else, over time the cost is going to go up. And so what we're doing, not from the policy standpoint, because I understand that, I get it, but from a revenue standpoint, we're saying that we're going to go from 65% of a cost that is going to go up over time, and we're going to change it to a cost per ounce, which is not going to go up over time because an ounce is an ounce. And so what we're doing is the opposite of good revenue-raising practices. If we wanted to accomplish the policy, we should say, okay, we'll take this 65% of wholesale and we'll make, just add a clause, minimum cost per can, $2.14. We will have accomplished what is allegedly being accomplished in this bill but we wouldn't be putting a cap on future growth. And so if you want to stop kids from using this by raising the price, put the $2.14 per can minimum on there, and you've done what this bill is going to do. But why in the world would we want to say we're going to go from a 65% of escalating cost over time and cap it and put it on a cost per ounce? This confusion between good policy and good revenue raising is taking us astray of what we ought to be looking at in ways and means. I voted against this. I think that this is not good revenue policy, even though it might be good public policy. And so I would think that those in charge here might consider sending this bill back to committee and just changing the way it's written, keep the 65% of wholesale, because that's going to go up over time, and then just put a minimum cost per can of $2.14. Then you've accomplished both. But I'll be a no vote on it as this way. Thanks.
Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, just to explain a little bit, the representative from Southern Klamath County had mentioned the fact that in Ways and Means we did remove the programs that were in the bill. That came about for a couple of reasons. One, there was great concern that having the programs in this bill put it in a separate category from the policy bills that we'll be hearing in Ways and Means in the first 2 weeks of May. So any sort of new program, any sort of new enhancement is going to be considered during those policy bills the first 2 weeks of May, as per was the agreement with the Senate side. And in terms of the medical examinations, that's a policy I think that has clear support, and we'll be working with the DOJ, Department of Justice budget, to get the medical examinations part of this taken care of. So I encourage your aye vote. Again, I think this is excellent policy. I think it will have a great impact on taking down tobacco use by our kids. I think it's the right way for our state to go. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Gelser, do you wish to close?
I do. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. First, I'd like to offer my thanks to the representative from rural Deschutes County who introduced me to a first today. I have never before been called a tool of big tobacco, and that's definitely something to take home to my kids tonight. They'll be a little surprised. On the revenue issue, I think one of the things that's important to recognize is that the change in the market and the entry of the low-cost brands has changed that trend of the cost increasing over time. And in fact, in Oregon, over the last 8 years, the average cost per tin of moist snuff has declined. And that is because in order to stay in the market, the higher priced brands are decreasing their price. And what happens for us is every time a smoker trades down, or a dipper trades down to a less expensive product, they pay less tax and we receive less revenue. So this actually is going to protect that revenue over time. A great example of this is that U.S. Tobacco recently announced a 20% reduction in its wholesale price, which will significantly bring down that revenue per can. So moving to this weight-based cost, I think, is very important. It's appropriate and it's consistent with our other taxing mechanisms. That said, I certainly am happy to join with any of you in a priority bill to speed up and increase the escalator on that rate. You will never see me vote against an increase in tobacco tax. In terms of the issue of taking sides in a tobacco tax war, a tobacco product war, that's not what this is about. Right now we have a revenue system that makes no sense. This puts everybody on a level playing field. If somebody has had an unfair advantage for a long time, when you even the playing field, they feel like they've been maligned. In fact, they haven't. We're just asking them to play by the same rules as everyone else. I don't believe in taking the sides of big tobacco. I will never take the side of big tobacco. I take the side of kids, and that's why I'm supporting this bill. House Bill 2672 will increase the price of tobacco. It's going to get it out of the hands of kids. It's time to stop giving tax breaks to big tobacco companies who peddle tobacco that's basically tobacco tricycles. Kids don't need this stuff. Help me end it. Vote yes on House Bill 2672.
Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Kotek, how do you vote? Aye. Kotek votes aye. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote? No. Gilliam votes no. Representative Barton, how do you vote?
Aye.
Barton votes aye. House Bill 2672B, having received the required 3/5 constitutional majority, is declared passed. Colleagues, in light of the time, the chair requests unanimous consent that the remaining bills on today's third reading of House Bills calendar be carried over to their proper place on the Thursday, April 23rd, 2009 calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Final reading, memorials and resolutions. Bills, reports, and other business lying on the table. First reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 5513 relating to financial administration of the Department of Consumer and Business Services and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 5514 relating to financial administration of the Department of Consumer and Business Services and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 5527 relating to financial administration of specified boards and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 48 relating to sexual offenses involving students and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 123 relating to child abuse records and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 157 relating to criminal records checks. Senate Bill 316 relating to clinical trials. Senate Bill 348 relating to safety of school reports and sports and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 484 relating to supplemental instruction and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 533 relating to shopping cart regulation. Senate Bill 579 relating to motor vehicle safety. Senate Bill 640 relating to license of real estate professionals.
Bills read for the first time or passed the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of Senate bills. Third reading of Senate bills. The chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended, that the bill remaining on today's third reading of Senate bills calendar be carried over to its proper place on Monday, May 4th, 2009's third reading calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Other business of the House, other business of the Senate. Orders of the day have been completed. Announcements. Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Republicans, we will caucus immediately following adjournment. Thank you.
Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Democrats, please get your lunches and meet me in the caucus room in 10 minutes.
Any further announcements? Remonstrances. Representative Wingard.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I want to take this opportunity to tell you a little bit more about a success story called Oregon Connections Academy, or ORCA. 4 years ago, they opened up the first statewide online public school on a charter with the Scioto School District. ORCA had a couple hundred kids and a dedicated staff. They follow state standards for their curriculum and testing. They have highly qualified, caring, licensed teachers who live and work in Oregon, putting money back into the local economy, and energetic learners into the community. 4 years later, ORCA has an enrollment of 2,600 students, kindergarten through 12th grade. And in June, they will have their very first graduating class. One of their star students has been accepted at 8 different Ivy League universities. ORCA also has its challenges. Because it was chartered before the legislature changed the rules and required 50% of the student population to come from the host district. Now ORCA is being forced to follow these new rules and might not survive in this new environment. And that would be a real tragedy for thousands of Oregonians. Let me tell you about some of the success stories. A second grade girl in Hillsboro waiting for a heart transplant who spends a lot of time at Dornbecker but insists on keeping up with her classmates and her homework at ORCA. Two sisters from Tigard who are now 12 and 15 years of age attending college and writing artificial intelligence software for the Veterans Hospital in Portland. The Jackson County boy who left the bricks and mortar school after another student attacked him with a pair of scissors. The boy is now in fifth grade at ORCA and doing seventh grade work. Cyber education is not for every child, but it should remain an option for those who need it to succeed. I hope we keep that in mind before we consider overregulating these wonderful virtual schools into extinction. Let's keep that option open to families and help ORCA celebrate the great things about online learning, not just today, but for many years to come. Thank you.
Further remonstrances, Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, Jackson County's unemployment rate has increased to 13.9% in March. Our county's unemployment rate has more than doubled just since last year. Unemployment has spread across the major industries across our county. Specifically, over the past year alone, my county, Jackson County, has lost 710 construction jobs 860 manufacturing jobs, 790 retail trade jobs, 140 wholesale trade jobs. When people in Jackson County lose their jobs, the effects are felt out throughout all of our communities. This is the worst unemployment Jackson County has seen in nearly two decades, and we have been told to expect even more job losses. Jackson County is one of the highest unemployed rates in a state with the second highest unemployment rate in the nation. Colleagues, this is unacceptable. It is unacceptable that we, as Oregonians, lose their jobs. The legislature, us, has done little to help business survive this recession and create new family jobs. We have spent countless hours debating policy issues such as puppy mills and snacks in machines and teachers' lounges. We are considering billions in taxes and fees. Today, we passed a bill that would make it more expensive just to die in Oregon. Meanwhile, several beneficial job creation bills have been allowed to die this session. Today, the House voted to keep a bill in committee that would have provided tax relief to low-income Oregonians and working families. House Bill 3469 would have created nearly 20,000 jobs, yet the bill will remain in committee. There is also the Main Street Incentive Plan, which at a reasonable cost to the state would have encouraged home and business owners to stimulate the economy by improving their properties. House Bill 3095 would have created about 6,000 new jobs, but the bill didn't get more than a courtesy hearing. Colleagues, until the legislature decides to address this economy and consider new ways to create jobs, we are going to consider seeing higher unemployment in Jackson County and throughout this state as a whole. I ask this body to come forward, step up to the plate, and let's get industry and people back to work.
Further remonstrances, Representative Reed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As I'm thinking about the work to come in the weeks that remain in this session, I'm particularly concerned about the budget, and like all of us, concerned about job creation. I think that's especially evident in the testimony that the Joint Ways and Means Committee has been hearing in Lincoln City and in Portland recently. I think it's clear that people around the state are really concerned about our budget, about the state budget, and about the services and programs that so many people depend on. We've heard about schools, we've heard about drug treatment, community colleges, the whole range of all the important things that the state does. But I'm concerned that with the motion today to withdraw, we may have missed some of the important data and information that's contained in the discussion that goes on in the legislature. When the bill was introduced, we asked for an analysis of the bill through the Oregon Tax Incidence Model, something called OTIM, that the Legislative Revenue Office uses to gauge its impact on the economy. And we wanted to really take that seriously and understand the claims, the effect of the bill. But the OTIM model has some limitations. And I want to underscore how that model is not especially useful during a recession. I'll quote from a memo that we got from the Legislative Revenue Office. It says, OTIM is not a short-term forecasting model because it, quote, starts with the basic assumption that the economy is in a long-run equilibrium position. That's what OTIM does. It is a commentary on where things settle. To go back to the quote, it means that there's, quote, no cyclical unemployment. The economy is not in recession in the model. Further, quote, the model is not designed to address the current problem of very high cyclical unemployment. So, in fact, I think that policy might even worsen the recession. The State Revenue Office, again, in a memo, says, quote, in a short-term recessionary environment, tax reductions increase the size of the state budget gap, putting further downward pressure on state services. In the short term, this can exacerbate the problem on insufficient demand in the state economy, end quote. I think it's clear that job creation is all of our top priority, but I think we can do more to stimulate job growth by investing in our infrastructure, providing the short-term benefit of jobs, and the long-term benefit to our state for decades to come. It's reckless tax cuts those that got us into this mess are not the way to go in the future. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further remonstrances, Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I wanted to simply note that both the bill that was attempted to be withdrawn today and the other bill mentioned by the member from Medford would have significant impacts in two areas. And the representative from Beaverton covered some of those. I want to talk about a little bit of the others. The most important thing that the House and the legislature can do in terms of sustaining and improving the economy is to maintain the basic services that the state provides. Believe it or not, almost all of those basic services are spelled J-O-B-S. When we cut basic services, we cut jobs. When we maintain basic services, we maintain jobs. And that's a key. The bills that were referred to by the representative from Medford, the main effect of the tax cut bill would have been on high-income individuals, not low-income individuals, because of the method in which the cut was calculated to be done. That's the reality of the way this kind of situation works when you do it that way. The other bill would allow for tax cuts for individuals doing things such as building swimming pools, as was testified to in one of the committees that heard this bill. I think that it's important for us to generate jobs, but the best way for us to do that is to maintain the basic services that Oregonians need that we pay for through our budget, not cutting taxes on high-income individuals. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further remonstrances, Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd just like to take this opportunity to stand up and speak for the 260,000-plus Oregonians who are out of work, including those who might run a backhoe that dig, among other things, swimming pool holes, including those who might have a pool cleaning business that for years and years would have the job of cleaning and maintaining the pool that may have been built, including those that a bill which was mentioned would support sustainable energy projects within our state, and for those who came to testify on the bill that has been mentioned who were not allowed to give that testimony, including a vice president of Solar World, one of the preeminent solar delivery systems within the state of Oregon. Many reasons can be given for not supporting job growth, but let's look in the face of the Oregonians who don't have the job when we do that, because they are the ones in need. Thank you.
Adjournment. Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the House adjourn until 10:15 a.m. Thursday, April 23rd, 2009.
Representative Jensen moves that the House adjourn until 10:15 a.m. on Thursday, April 23rd, 2009. Without objection, the House is adjourned.